This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors' links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Roger Wu, a partner at boutique Chinese private equity firm Mason Capital. He spoke with me on the sidelines of the Hong Kong Venture Capital and Private Equity Association's annual conference in Hong Kong. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, Roger. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Thank you.
First, maybe give us a brief introduction of Mason Capital and also its investment strategy.
Sure. Mason Capital is, is a boutique private equity fund. We have been established since 2004, based in Shenzhen. We look at the broader consumer sectors in China. That includes consumer technology, consumer services, and consumer lifestyle. So, more specifically, we have been investing consumer brands in China. We have been investing consumer channels, including the new channels such as e-commerce, online direct sales, and so forth. We look at some of the technology products from a consumer angle. In addition to that, we have some healthcare services, which we also look at from a consumer service angle.
So are you U.S. dollar fund?
We have had three RMB funds, and we'll have a U.S. dollar fund as well. We have a U.S. dollar fund that's already set up. We're going to invest out of that this year. So,
Can I ask how much capital you manage in total?
By the end of this year, we'll be probably total about over 500 million.
U.S. dollars?
Equivalent, but in different pockets.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
So you are raising a U.S. dollar fund, right?
We have a U.S. dollar fund that's already set up. That U.S. dollar fund will grow from probably about 100 to 200 through the course of this year.
Well, the broader consumer sector, it's been an old story in China. In this conjecture, right, where do you see opportunities specifically? Let's start with healthcare tech. I see that most of the investments in the healthcare sector are in the devices sector.
Yes.
Explain why you chose devices.
Yeah. We have a broad strategy, which is more a research-driven strategy. We look at the consumer sectors in detail and over a period of time, and we look at the sector as whole. We identify certain subsectors in the consumer space. In this case, we look at device and we look at healthcare services from the angle of consumers. We believe these are very attractive sectors. For example, device, it's a combination. Well, there are a lot of smaller device companies, but they produce device which are more specific to that segment, and they can become a relative leader in that small segment. What we focus on is mostly are the consumer subsector leaders. So device companies, naturally fit that criteria.
So one of the company you invested is a company that specializes in making...
respiratory device.
Yes, yeah, right.
They're the largest in China homegrown brand, and they've been growing their business quite steadily. They focus on the OTC market, selling to, basically individuals who need them. This company is called BMC. We look at a new breed of entrepreneurs who most of them have had, overseas experience, studied overseas, or even did R&D for large multinational companies, and they wanted to come back and basically use their knowledge to start devices company to help the Chinese people. it's already the largest homegrown brand.
When you invest it, it's already the largest.
When we invest it, the market is quite small. There are only large, the imported brands are, you know, quite dominant in the market than people paying a significantly higher price for these devices. So there was, you know, no domestic substitute for that product. So BMC was one of the first to have a domestic brand, a substitute for the imports.
And then how do they compete with imported brands, which often, you know, consumers in China are more confident or trust?
Well, you know, first of all, we have to believe that their quality and gets improved consistently over the years. And because they're a homegrown brand and they can provide service better to the customers and to the, you know, to the patients. And also on the price point, why they're very much lower, you know, sometimes it's half or a third of the price. So it's happening in many of the device sectors, not just BMC, because across board we see this trend of domestic substitution happening quite regularly. In addition, for companies like this, when they get bigger and more mature, they also started to export their products.
What's your plan for the company and also in terms of exit?
Well, you know, our strategy and our philosophy always has been we partner with the strong team and we want to grow with the business. We're a patient long-term investor. So we believe if the business is performing well, their underlying growth, their underlying products are doing well. We are not too worried about the exit because, you know, if they're big enough, they can go IPO by itself. If they're not, we also see a lot of strategic interest to acquire these device companies on the market from domestic large corporates, from international device companies.
When you invested in the company BMC, was the valuation high?
Yeah, it was a while ago. So we invested in 2010. I can give you a valuation sort of a metrics for this type of business. When we look at it, we have a top-down research and, we want to understand the potential of that space. So, you know, for a leader in that space, naturally they will have significant market share. We want to price that into a business for their growth potential. We don't just look at it a business based on the PE or the price to revenue of that year. It's actually quite shallow. Sometimes it kind of restrict our own sort of opportunity. We want to understand the business from a growth point of view. Even though when people look at it, you know, some other investor may think it's expensive, but, you know, a few years later they look back, it was unbelievably cheap. But some other situations, when we see the company, although they have a large profit, but, you know, the potential or the competitors will catch up, right? So, you know, in a few years maybe it's not that attractive. So really, we don't look at a company standalone based on their own sort of financials, but we want to understand the sector and their growth as a whole.
So let's go on to DJI, world's biggest drone maker. Both your company and DJI are headquartered in Shenzhen.
Yeah.
So did that play a role in how you discovered the company?
DJI, we saw the company very early on, back in 2012, actually. Initially, we met them in a trade show. Research is in our gene, so we wanted to understand the business, understand the company more. So naturally, we're interested, and we spend a lot of time understanding the company over time. Does it help to be in Shenzhen? I think we have a business that we look at opportunities nationwide. But having said that, you know, in Shenzhen, there are a lot of emerging business. There are entrepreneurs that started very interesting business in Shenzhen. We believe, and we encouraged by the fact it's very good ground for innovation.
Did you participate in one of the venture rounds of the company?
We were the first institutional investor into that company. So we look at it from a consumer angle. Although it's a technology company, And they have very good technology and very good tech team as well. But our angle, when we look at the business, we believe they can succeed in the broader consumer market.
So did you continue to invest in the later rounds of the company?
No, just one round. We have a highly disciplined approach that we don't, you know, participate in a bidding situation. A lot of times our based on our research and based on our industry connections, we want to identify the trend in the sector early on, and to be one of the earlier investors in that sector development. DJI is a good example. We've recently invested in an insurance brokerage business. It's the insurance brokerage business has been around for 15 years, very sizable, profitable business. But we're the first, private equity investor into that company. It's called Jiangtai. It's the top three insurance brokerage business in China. It's it's essentially a top three business. It's been a top three business for the past 5-6 years. The fact that a lot of investors are focusing on TMT, other sectors, but we've been looking at the sector for at least 5 years, if not more.
Just lastly, because I just noticed that you actually have invested in an online-offline business, OTO business called Helijia.
Yes.
So this is interesting because valuation for this company seems very high. I think the last April 2015, they raised Series C round. Tell us about your thoughts of OTO.
We've looked at altogether some 200 O2O companies, and we made one investment. Helijia is a very good example you mentioned. I'm glad you brought it up because, first of all, from our angle, this is quite a special company in a sense. It's new online consumer channel, and from that channel, it's, people buy not products, buy services. It's a trend going forward that will happen many more times, is that services being rendered online. And the reason we like Helijia, and from the valuation is certainly beyond A round and B round, we have seen a big step up. But also the fact that this space, the beauty space, is quite consolidated. The second company or close competitor of Helijia is not even one-tenth of the size. So, we like the fact it's already a leader in the space, in a consolidated space. It's much bigger than the second player and has this dominant market position.
What do you say to people who say, this kind of service is a very high involvement, person-to-person contact? Once you establish a relationship with your professional service provider,
yes,
you might just go offline.
There is a whole support system behind it. The two factors that actually we don't see that happening a lot. There are two main reasons to that. One is security, that the service providers, the manicurists, wanted to rely on the system to protect themselves, a lot of times. The second most important reason is the commentary, so the rating system. That person, if that particular manicurist, if they want to build a reputation for themselves, they heavily rely on the ratings from third parties. If they do this themselves, they won't be able to enjoy that benefit. If they're a good service provider, they want to make a name for themselves. And frequently, if the top performers on that platform gets a lot of new business from whoever wants to, go on the platform and select a new service provider.
So since you've looked at hundreds of O2O companies in China, what's your outlook for the industry?
We don't think O2O is right for many sectors. For example, their O2O companies provide nannies, right? Their O2O companies provide cleaning service or even send a chef to the home. These are, interesting business, but we don't see scalability. So really have to differentiate from, each sector.
Which sector does it work?
again, we look at 200 companies, we only make one investment. We want to go with where our conviction is. So we believe beauty is a good sector.
How many players will emerge and become a permanent, or, you know, a consistent provider, you know, continuing providing services for decades to come?
Again, for the consumer sector, it's a very large space, and we look at each subsector very carefully. And that there are certain characteristics will support an O2O business, that certain characteristics will not. It's hard to gauge how many companies will survive, but you know, certainly there's probably a bubble on the market. You know, many of these O2O companies will eventually fade away. But for selected subsectors in the consumer space, there will be O2O, large O2O companies emerging and become giant companies in the future.
Okay, this is really the last question.
Okay.
So for HeLiJia, how is the company doing right now, and are they planning to raise another round?
Well, we don't know about a fundraising plan, probably not a good place to discuss that, but operational-wise, it's doing very well. As we mentioned, they're already the dominant, quite consolidated space. They're expanding to multiple cities, over 12 right now. And last I look at it, the transaction volume per day is over 10,000 bookings every day. Yeah, also, they expanded from just manicure to, you know, other beauty services, for example, makeup service, you know, hair, sort of hair treatment. You know, beauty sector as a whole is very sizable sector, and, you know, I believe they have a lot of growth ahead of them.
Thank you so much, Roger, for your time.
Thank you very much.